Katya peeked into the laboratory. It was lunchtime, and she'd joined the other women in the ladies' lounge for 15 minutes before making a pretense of needing to use the bathroom. Slipping back through the corridors on her way to the lab, she'd gone unnoticed. The men usually left the building for lunch, and the place was deserted. In the laboratory, she sat down at the counter. Over the past 2 days, she'd surreptitiously prepared the DNA samples, and this morning, she had put them in the thermal cycler. The machine always took a few hours to process the samples, and she had to be there right when they were ready so that nobody else would take them out by mistake. There were 2 samples, one from Eric Scarberry and the other from Noof's escort, Muhammad. She watched the machine whir into its final phase and glanced back at the door. She had just enough time to put the profile printouts in her handbag and hide the evidence of her work before Madawi came back into the lab, followed by Basma. The women sat down to resume their work, undisturbed that Katya was already there. They seemed happy and continued their lunchtime chatter. Relieved, Katya went to work on blood samples from a case she'd prepared that morning. She glanced at her handbag. She hadn't taken the time to look at the printouts, and now it was bothering her. Had either DNA been a match for Noof's baby? She would have to wait until she got home to find out.
The boat rocked around him, and Neo realized that someone was above on deck. There was a clatter in the doorway. He scrambled to his feet and saw Miss Hijazi at the top of the ladder, the hem of her cloak clutched in her fist. "Neo," she called, "are you there?" It had been a few days since he'd seen Miss Hijazi. He'd been trying not to think about her. "I'm coming down," she said. "Listen, Neo, I've tried calling you. Why don't you turn your cell phone on?" "I'm busy. Does Othman know that you're here? This is important. I got the DNA you left. I was finally able to analyze it, and it turns out that neither Eric nor Mohammed fathered Noof's child." Summoning his nerve, he took a robe from the door and put it on. "It means there has to be a third man," she called out. Moments later, he emerged from the bedroom and found her in the kitchenette. "You shouldn't be here," he snapped. "This is a zina crime, you know. Did you tell Othman you were coming here?" "No, but..." "And why aren't you at work? I thought you had a job."
"I took the morning off. Look, I'm sorry to intrude."
She said it as if she meant it. He averted his gaze. Even though she was wearing a burqa, he still didn't like staring into her eyes. "I need your help with something," she said. "What?" "I want to investigate a site that may be connected to Noof's death." "Well, what do you need me for? You've got a driver and a fiancé." She didn't reply. She turned to the window, crossed her arms, and gripped her elbows. Neo waited, growing more tense by the second. "Othman doesn't want me to do this anymore," she said, her voice unsteady. "We talked about it, and he said I was risking my job." Slowly, Nair sat down on the sofa and looked round for his shoes. "Are you?"
"Not really. Maybe a little. But I'm very careful. And this is about Noof. It's about his sister. You would think he would take all the help he can get."
Nair was torn. He wanted to tell her that it was no use complaining about Othman to him. He was Othman's friend, and it wasn't going to change. He couldn't see her face behind the burqa, but her eyes were expressive enough to tell him that she was upset. Othman or not, he felt a pang of sympathy.
"I can't explain Othman's behavior," he said.
"You think he doesn't trust me?" she said.
"I didn't say that. Your face said it for you."
He was impressed that she'd noticed his face without looking directly at him. Her arms were crossed in a defiant way, and he remembered her stubborn silence at the examiner's office.
"She's not going to give up the investigation," he thought. "Not even for Othman." And he felt the same mix of indignation and grudging respect he'd had then.
I'll talk to him, Nea said. That's what you want, isn't it? She turned to face him, and he quickly averted his gaze. Yes, if you can. But more than that. She faced the window again. I'd like to know that you're still in this. He hesitated. I want to know what happened to her. And I think so does Othman, whether he feels that way now or not. She seemed relieved, or grateful, and she uncrossed her arms. Then will you come with me right now? I need your expertise. He hesitated again. Tracking, she said, as if that explained it. After a pause, he nodded. Just give me time for morning prayers. Miss Hijazi had told him they were going to an abandoned zoo. The night before, she had flipped the newspaper to find an article that highlighted the deplorable conditions for animals living in Jeddah's smaller zoos. As she studied the pictures of hairless, bone-thin chimpanzees, she found her thoughts going back to the manure on Noof's wrist and Nair's uncle's discovery that whatever animal it had come from had probably been poisoned. She hadn't yet determined where the manure had come from, but what better place to start looking than the abandoned zoo? So, following her Toyota once again, Nair pulled off the freeway and drove inland, down a desolate strip of road that intersected a field of grey sand. With every mile came a deeper sense of guilt. In his heart, he knew the truth. When she had asked him to come to the zoo, he had wanted to be in her company. A dozen whitewashed homes dotted the valley wall. Above, a rusted concertina wire formed the western perimeter of the abandoned zoo. Nair rolled down the window and took a deep breath. It wasn't camel shit. He knew that smell. This was definitely zoo smell. He had to admit that Miss Hijazi was clever to think of coming here. If Noof had actually been to a zoo, she'd have had a dozen to choose from, but if she was meeting someone in secret, she'd have come here. They parked in a vacant lot near a children's playground that looked to have been unused for a decade. They approached the old entrance, a metal ticket cage tucked in the shadow of a palm. Nair glanced back at Katya's driver and saw that he had returned to the air-conditioned car. His over-casual way of letting Miss Hijazi wander off with a non-family man rankled Nair, even though it had happened before. Ahmad must think he presented no danger. What would you be doing, Nair said, if you were Noof and you came to the zoo? She gave him a nervous glance. Maybe you'd be meeting a man. A welcome cool enveloped them as they wandered beneath a row of palm trees overlooking a former exhibit. In the distance, they could see the top of a mountain, an imitation Matterhorn, undoubtedly once populated by goats. Let's check that out, she said. He grunted a reply. The Matterhorn was as quiet as a tomb, and they approached it carefully. It was not as tall as it seemed from a distance, perhaps 10 meters high. Its base was sprinkled with flowering plants. I think that's oleander, he said. Yes, she said. Odd that it should grow here, where the animals could eat it. Extracting a baggie, she took a sample of the oleander and the dirt around it. While she worked, Nair circled the mountain. The shell was made of green and brown plaster, and the tip was painted white to look like snow. At the bottom edge, he spotted a doorway. Pulling gently, he prized the door open and peered inside. The interior was hollow. Through various cracks in the plaster, the outside light poured in, revealing a dirt floor, white walls, and a blanket bundled in a corner. The air was wet and heavy. "Find something," she asked. "A hideout," he said. He switched on his penlight and ran it quickly over the ground. "The floor is pretty smooth. Someone cleaned up." "I'll take this blanket," she said. "If I'm lucky, I'll get some skin cells." Nair shut the door in the Matterhorn's side. "It may be no relation to our case at all." He caught a smile in her eyes. "What?" "You said, our case." "I said, your case." They spent another half an hour scouring the grass around the mountain, but their search produced nothing. Exiting the zoo, they followed a footpath down a very steep hill and into the valley on the zoo's southern side. The air was heating rapidly. "Who was with her in the desert?" she said. "Who could have been with her? Everyone has an alibi. Her whole family was home. Othman tells me that her escort was shopping with his wife. What about Eric?"
"His alibi checks out. I made some calls last night. He was at work the whole day."
She stopped at the bottom of the hill.
"The way I see it, there has to be a third man, someone we don't know about yet."
They had reached a circular patch of land that marked the end of the access road. He noticed the dark orange colour of the dirt. Scraping the ground with his fingers, he felt the hardness of clay. "You know, my uncle ran an analysis of the dirt from Noof's head wound," he said. "I think this dirt is a match." Katya bagged a sample of the dirt. "So she could have been hit here." Nair turned to a scrubby row of palms, their branches dense enough to offer a bit of shade. Behind the trees stood a thicket of bushes, overgrown and tangled. It was a sad, forsaken place. The wind didn't even stir the leaves. He walked to the edges of the clearing and studied the tire tracks. He tried to view them through Mutluck's eyes, but there were dozens of tracks and he couldn't keep them apart. It seemed that cars and trucks came down the access road frequently. One set of tire tracks had stopped in the middle of the clearing. Careful not to disturb them, Nair followed the tracks to the edge of the access road, where it seemed the car had spun around and headed back past the zoo. And there, at the furthest edge of the clearing, he noticed a metallic glimmer in the bushes. Moving closer, he found a tin can, half buried in the dirt. He picked it up, disappointed. "Nair," Miss Hijazi's voice sounded strange. She was kneeling in the dirt, poking gently at something. "I think you should come here." Dropping the can, he went to her and saw that she had brushed the sand away from a crooked, pink object. It was a shoe, a stiletto, squashed flat by a car's tire. "It's her other shoe," he said, kneeling down and helping to pry it out of the dirt. "She must have dropped it. But wouldn't she have noticed if she dropped it? Wouldn't she have come back for it?" Nea nodded. She'd held on to the other one, even in the desert, where it was entirely useless. "I don't think she would have left it here on purpose," he said. Miss Hijazi looked at Nair. "Unless she was trying to leave a clue behind. She must have been abducted."